This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study pressure to deny Jesus, the beggar worships Jesus, the good shepherd, Jesus lays down his life, and Jesus and the Father are one. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org, thewordendures.org.
An instinct. A feeling. The force brought us together. We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
Long have I waited, and now you're coming together. Is your undoing.
That's the trailer for the movie Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. I was reminiscing yesterday as I walked with my son into the movie theater to see that film, that back in 1977, a 13-year-old Todd Wilkin had been hotly anticipating the very first Star Wars. I was there on opening day. I had to see it. I went back to see it again and again and again. Well, I'm full grown now, and my enthusiasm for Star Wars has waned quite a bit. Does this last in the saga that began back in 1977, The Rise of Skywalker, does it still have the lightning in the bottle? Does it still deliver what those first groundbreaking movies did? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to be reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, titled Christianity, Fine Art, and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
J.J. Abrams directs this film. He has to do a lot of things besides make a lot of money. What is his goal in The Rise of Skywalker?
This is purportedly the last in this Skywalker saga. So this is the last, like the capstone of all of these nine movies. So he has to kind of wrap it all up, basically. That's the goal. So he has to make a movie that concludes this trilogy, the Disney trilogy of Star Wars films. So he has to wrap that up, but he's also having to wrap up the whole thing, which is a lot to have to do. And he's got to try to thread the needle on the audience, because there's a kind of a divided opinion out there amongst Star Wars fans, old fans, new fans, people on different spectrums of the political sphere, maybe even, and he's got to have to deal with all of that. And the previous film was super divisive, The Last Jedi by Rian Johnson. So this one, again, like, in a way, he's sort of like a safe pair of hands because he did The Force Awakens, and now he's being brought in to kind of manage all of this, I guess. So I think that that's all part of the goal of what to do with this film.
I saw it yesterday, and that's what it felt like to me. He had a bunch of boxes he needed to tick, a bunch of stories that he needed to wrap up, questions he needed to answer for the audience so that they could kind of close the box on the Skywalker story, which has been, what, running now how many years? Going on 50?
Yeah, well, not quite, but 1977, right? Yeah. So that was the first of these films. So yeah, quite a while.
It felt like a patchwork quilt to me in terms of a film where everybody had to get a little bit of screen time. Even all the old original cast had to get a little bit of screen time and a little bit of storyline in there.
Okay, so now, did you see the prequels, the ones that...
Unfortunately, yes, I did.
You did, okay. I really felt that this movie felt a lot like The Revenge of the Sith, the third of those films, because, again, it had to wrap up this trilogy and, like, that prequel trilogy, and then it had to tick off a bunch of boxes because, narratively, the story had to get to a point where enough things had happened for it to line up with the 1977 film, right? Like, and so I feel like there was some similar things that had to get done. And again, with these two first films in this Disney Star Wars trilogy, they're kind of almost like two first acts because they're so different from each other, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. So this is almost like a second film in a trilogy and not even like the third film. And that was the same problem with that prequel trilogy, because The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, those ones were very different from each other because you had two totally different actors playing Anakin Skywalker. So it, those kind of seemed like two first films in a way. So there's kind of a weird parallel between these two, the prequel trilogy and this Disney Star Wars trilogy. Anyways, I felt like that, and I felt like this was like a like 1.5 movies crammed into one movie, and I would have preferred it if J.J. Abrams had just made 3 Star Wars movies and maybe told the story beginning to end the way he wanted to tell it and actually had a plan for the whole thing, which... it doesn't seem to be the case with this.
Act as though you're talking to someone who, way back in 1977, watched the first one and never saw another one. Is there any possible way they could watch this and have any idea what's going on? What would they need to know?
There's no way. If you'd only seen that first one, like A New Hope, which they call it now, from 1977, you'd at least have to have watched A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. You at least need to have seen those. And you, you're going to be introduced to all these characters, so you should at least have seen, I guess, The Force Awakens by J.J. Abrams. If you'd seen those ones, you could pretty much maybe even just skip the middle one, the Last Jedi. You might not have to have watched that one at all. You could just skip over it and watch this. At the very least, you need that, because the villain in this is this Emperor Palpatine character who wasn't really even introduced until the Return of the Jedi, not formally, just a little bit here and there. So you would need at least to have all of that under your belt, I think, before you get into this.
What story is being told here? I mean, obviously it's wrapping up a lot of stories, but what plot line is being followed here? And we'll just warn our listeners that there will be some spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of kept some things under wraps. They did a lot with this particular film. They really came out early and told you certain things were going to be in the film before the film was released, so that you wouldn't, like, so that the audience would know. So already they'd already let everyone know that this character of Palpatine, the Emperor, was going to be in this film, even though he was definitively deceased by the end of Return of the Jedi. You know, and this is kind of a curveball, or at least it's kind of out of left field. This Ian McDiarmid has come back to play this character again, and he played it in the character in the prequels as well. But I guess the burning question in this series has been, and J.J. Abrams set it up with The Force Awakens, is who is Rey and who are her parents? So this film gets down to the bottom of what her lineage is. And the story that it tells is that she's actually the granddaughter of this villain, Emperor Palpatine, and that's who she is. And then by the very, very end of the film, she adopts the name Skywalker, because all of the Skywalkers are gone. So the Rise of Skywalker is kind of her adopting that family name by the end of it. And I guess you could say that the B plot of the film also is the redemption of Kylo Ren, who is Princess Leia and Han Solo's son, who went kind of rogue and bad and joined the dark side of the Force. And he has a redemption story in this film. That comes to a conclusion. So in a way, he also is the rise of Skywalker, because he leaves the dark side, comes to the light side, and participates in helping to, you know, win the day against the returning villain of the Emperor.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, on this Friday, January the 3rd, when we come back. He says it has the feel of an Avengers movie. We'll find out how so next.
Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Why do the Lutheran confessions quote the ancient church fathers? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column, Why We Bother with the Fathers, in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Professor Adam Kuntz details his journey from the Book of Common Prayer to the Book of Concord. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Are you living in central Iowa and longing for a church where the gospel is boldly confessed in all of its purity? Are you tired of hearing the latest purpose-driven How to Live Your Best Life Now TED Talk? Are you desperate to hear the preaching of the cross, which brings you and your children the knowledge, peace, and comfort of the gospel? Then come to Holy Cross Lutheran Church. Located in Carlisle, Iowa, at the southeast corner of Des Moines, we're a short ride from everywhere in the city. Visit our website, holycrosscarlisle.org.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. St. John Lutheran, Mayville, Wisconsin. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas, St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth.
You can't act like a peacock if you know that nobody is looking at you.
If I take a different practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, what I am actually incorporating is not a neutral practice.
Did I repent enough? I don't know. Was my repentance true? Those Christians go around on crutches. They have a debilitated gospel.
The first verse in the ordination rite says, "Go therefore unto all nations We know that go there is not an imperative. It's as you go, while you're going. But note, that's the first verse mentioned, going.
An hour from now, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year. We've taken the five top vote-getters from Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week throughout 2019. We're going to play those five soundbites for you, and you will get the opportunity to pick, with your vote, Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year. The listener with the best vote will receive recordings from all nine Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. In the meantime, we're reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, titled Christianity, Fine Art, and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, you say that the producers and director of the film might have at one point sat down and said, hey, the Avengers movies are really popular. Why don't we do some of what they do? Why do you say that?
Well, it just seems to have these little moments that are like, this has got a lot of fan service in it, and there's kind of different ways to do fan service. The Marvel movies, which is also owned by Disney, they like these kind of big splashy, like, and it works for that kind of a thing. Marvel is its own thing, so they really focus in on this big splashy kind of action and all of this kind of stuff. And Star Wars has action, it always has. But it's a different kind of a thing. So it feels like there are just beats in here and moments that are kind of a little too Marvel-ish. But if somebody really loves Marvel and they really love Star Wars and they don't mind the fact that they have that stuff in there, then that's fine. So at one point, the stormtroopers have backpacks and they can fly. So then you have this kind of goofball, cheesy dialogue between everybody. And again, Star Wars is full of goofball, cheesy dialogue. But they're all saying, oh, they can fly now. And it's meant to be a joke. And it's kind of the sort of joke you would get in a Marvel movie and not so much the kind of joke you would get in a Star Wars movie, if that makes kind of any kind of sense. So it feels like there's Marvel fingerprints all over this movie, which is understandable because Disney owns both franchises and Marvel has been very successful and Star Wars has kind of been floundering. Like, they spent $4 billion buying this thing and they need to get their money out of it and they need to make it successful to the point where there's going to be more of it. And then you could also just kind of contrast all that with the Disney Plus TV show by Jon Favreau, who's also a Disney favorite director, called The Mandalorian. And that seems to get all of the fan service and kind of the humor and everything right. So it has the Mandalorian has the DNA of Star Wars, the original trilogy, kind of nailed in a lot of ways. It's really quite close to the original trilogy, whereas this Rise of Skywalker certainly has that kind of more Marvel sort of feel to it by comparison, if that kind of helps.
Yeah, very comic bookish. I was even noticing in the editing, which, and I was clued into this by a review that I read, that it is being edited in such a rapid fashion, you feel like you're reading a comic book.
Well, it was even being edited while they were filming it, like they had like tents up, because they had like 2 months less time to make this film than normal. And J.J. Abrams, by the end of the day, was just exhausted. So he had to be able to like get into a tent and help work on the editing while the film is going on. And you can do this with digital media, which you could never have done with film. Like, you had to wait for it to go back and be like processed and things. So that ship has sailed for the production of films. So he was kind of quite involved with that. And another kind of thing about the comic book angle of it is, and maybe, you know, I'll get your opinion on this too. The thing about comic books is that it's quite abbreviated and you can jump from one panel to the next panel. And, you know, you don't have to show how exactly you got from point A to point B. You can kind of, it's almost like a shorthand. It's like Cliff Notes or Cole's Notes or something, where you're painting with a really broad brush. And it felt like this film, there was like bits and pieces missing that would help it all make more sense. And they just weren't there. And I even ran into an article where this Marianne Brandon, who was a lady who was one of the editors for the film, just said that, you know, there's so much information in the film and so many characters that they wanted to have the audience concentrating on it. And this is a quote from her. She says, "I think we felt we didn't need to clutter the film up with things you didn't need to know." And she's talking about this Emperor Palpatine and how he seems to have come back from the dead. And they had information about it in the film, but it seemed like it was going off on a tangent or something, or what, wrecked the pacing. So they just kind of ditched it. But then it just leaves so many questions about things. And it just, I think that the editing is where it's just, it feels super rushed, if that makes any sense, to get from point A to point B. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a long movie, but it felt rushed the whole time. I'm curious about the appearance of the late Carrie Fisher in this film. I understand that the original plan was to build this entire movie around her before she passed away several years ago.
Well, yeah, she passed away before the rise of, while the Last Jedi came out in theaters. So people went to that knowing that they were watching her last kind of true performance, as it were. And with this, then they had to take a bunch of things and work around it. So it's about as good as it could possibly be. But I think one of the things that are certainly, I think, and again, there's piles of rumors swirling around, like, what was the original idea with this? Because one of the directors who was attached to it originally, he still has a writing credit, this Colin Trevorrow, who has been involved with some of the Jurassic Park related stuff in the past. You know, like, what was the plan? How was it all supposed to come together? And I just think naturally, looking at these three films, there the redemption moment for Kylo Ren when he comes back to himself, as it were, they managed to bring in Harrison Ford to come in again and reprise his role, not as a force ghost or something, but just as kind of almost like a memory or recollection of this conversation that he'd had with his son. So Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, is remembering this conversation he had with his dad, Han Solo, played by Harrison Ford. But now it's daylight and it's not on a, you know, in the dark. And so that all happened in The Force Awakens. And then now here you have the retread of that. And it's the same dialogue. But instead, at the end of that dialogue where Kylo Ren then like murders his father, instead here he doesn't. And he throws his lightsaber into the depths of the, you know, ocean or wherever they're, you know, the water that's there. It seems to me that it would make sense if Carrie Fisher had been alive, that that conversation would have been the mother and the son. And it would have been the forgiveness between the mother and the son that would have brought him back to the light side of the Force. And I think that would have been the way that it just makes sense that that's what would have happened. And of course, you can't convincingly do that when you just don't have anything to, like, you don't have a lot to work on, and it would be so, people would be so distracted by kind of like in the movie Rogue One, where they brought back Peter Cushing from the dead to play Moff Tarkin. I think that it would have been very, very distracting in that moment. So they bring back Harrison Ford to play Han Solo, and it works. But I think Carrie Fisher would have been the one to do that as Princess Leia had she been alive, if that makes some kind of sense.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the, I'm going to call them plot contrivances, that I found less than credible, even suspending disbelief to the point of you have to when you're watching, yes, Star Wars.
Well, yeah, yeah.
One of them was the fact that, and it actually figures late in the movie into a pretty key scene. Apparently, the character of Rey and Kylo Ren, when they're kind of mind melding through the Force with one another throughout this film, they can also hand each other objects too. And when I saw that, I was like, I know the Force is supposed to be powerful, but it would have been nice to know that at some previous point in all these stories.
Yeah.
It's almost as though the Force now can do anything.
But here's, this is one of the few things that I thought was creative and I really liked. And that actually is a carryover from The Last Jedi. It's one of the few things in that that kind of, you know, they did some interesting things with in this film. Because in The Last Jedi, there was they were already having this mind-melding, you know, force connection or whatever. And there were scenes where there'd be water in one place, but the other place didn't have water. And at the end of it, the person in the place that didn't have water was wet. So they already kind of set up some of that stuff, which is okay. But because there wasn't a really strong roadmap from the beginning to plant the seeds along the way to make that feel like it makes all of the logical sense within the story that you want, what ends up happening is it feels like what you're talking about, like a plot contrivance, that it becomes kind of just a shortcut to get from point A to point B. Then you start to think, well, is this lazy writing? Like, what's going, like, why, like, throw me a bone here. So this, like, there, it does have some connection with other things. It's just, it's not fleshed out enough for it to be, to really land, I guess, or for it to not feel like a plot contrivance. There are just some things in this film where it's like, well, that was super convenient, this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing. And again, like all of that, there's this kind of scavenger hunt plot. And a lot of this stuff is very much video game stuff. Like, you need to talk to this person to get to that thing, and then you need this thing to go to there to do this and then do that. And it's just very much like a video game. And that's fine for like Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, or The Next Level or something like that, because that's literally a movie about a video game. In these ones, it just kind of feels kind of like a contrivance. And that's just an additional thought about some of these kind of things in the film.
So in the end, does it hang together as a story because it's trying to tick all these boxes? And does it keep us well within the Star Wars genre?
Well, it's pretty rickety. I mean, I think that after some scrutiny, it's probably not going to hold up quite as well. It's fun when you're watching it, put it that way. But, I mean, Star Wars has always had big reveals, real curveball answers to things. You know, Darth Vader is Luke's dad, all of that kind of stuff. You know, like even the character of like Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, when you add in the prequels, like he becomes comically disingenuous. Like all the things that he says to Luke at the beginning of the first Star Wars movie, it's like, later he has to say, well, that was true from a certain point of view. So you get a little bit of that going on here. I think that's fine. One thing that I'm a little bit concerned about in terms of the overall narrative of everything is that it kind of, does it cheapen like Anakin Skywalker bringing balance to the Force and him like stepping up to Palpatine and the end of Return of the Jedi and the father being redeemed by the son and all of the rest of that stuff? Does it cheapen that when it ends the way it ends? I think that's a question people are going to have to keep asking later who, you know, care about this story. The fact that Kylo Ren did actually have his, you know, redemption was great. I think as Christian viewers, that's something that people are going to be happy with, the fact that he did, maybe not the final ending of how his character went, but the fact that he did have this redemption in his story. I think that was a great part of the film.
With all of that said, is there more in the tank for Disney with Star Wars? Are they planning something different, something more in this universe? It cost them a lot of money.
I think they're going to give all of this a rest for a bit, but, you know, Daisy Ridley, like, coming back to play Rey in her own spinoff thing could be the case. They kind of set that up at the very, very end of the film. And I'm sure that like the success of The Mandalorian and some of the other things they have coming down the pipeline, if they're as successful as The Mandalorian, there's something about Darth Maul and the rest of this. If that Disney Plus stuff is successful, you might start to see more of this. Rogue One was a really good movie. That's probably the best of these Disney films so far. So Disney is going to continue to capitalize on their investment, I'm sure.
There is, at the very end of this film, in the big celebration scene, a blink and you'll miss it lesbian kiss. What's that all about?
Well, I think this is, I have a very cynical approach to this. I think that on the one hand, it placates a certain, you know, segment of the population that wants to see this stuff in everything from, you know, Beauty and the Beast, you know, all whatever. Show me some kids thing and they want to have it in there, you know, and show me some popular TV show or popular movie franchise. They want to have it in there. It placates them, but it, maybe it makes the boardroom happy at Disney. I don't know. But I think that it's there because this is the super cynical approach to it. If you put it in there, people are going to talk about it. So some people are going to be really angry about it, and they're going to blog about it and make YouTube videos, and you're going to get a bunch of free advertising out of that. And then on the other hand, you're going to get people who are like, oh, look at them. Look, they're so virtuous, you know, in the popular culture, social justice warrior kind of style of virtue, quote unquote. So they get free advertising everywhere. But I think at the same time, everybody's being had to make money. I think I would guess that it's actually a lot more calculated than it comes across. And, you know, I think that on some level, the LGBTQ community is being used by corporations to make money. And it's to me, it was crystal clear that that was the case. And maybe I'm just really cynical, but that's where I'm at with all of this stuff right now.
You've mentioned The Mandalorian a couple times with about a minute here, Ted. Why do you think that's been such a success?
I think it just has the right tone. It has the fan service that's in it is smart. It has a compelling story. And strangely enough, I think it was successful because it had an air of mystery. And it had the air of mystery because they released an episode one at a time each week, which is, I know, super old-fashioned, but then people were kind of intrigued and they wanted to know where things went, and they slowly pushed the plot along and it arrived somewhere very interesting. So I think that that's one of the reasons why. And clearly Jon Favreau understands Star Wars, and, you know, if he doesn't end up with a bigger role at Disney dealing with Star Wars, it would be amazing to me if he didn't. I think that he should.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, called Christianity, Fine Arts, and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, spend some time with Terry Mattingly talking about the media, religion, and President Trump. Stay tuned.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Do you long for a church that celebrates the divine service with reverence and joy, but without the unbiblical baggage imposed by a supposedly infallible hierarchy? Do you long for a church that confesses a divinely instituted office of the holy ministry for the giving of the Lord's gifts to his people, and yet values and lifts high the priesthood of all believers? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We're what you've been looking for. Find an historic, authentic church near you on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries, right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, Chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.